This is True Wealth. And again, Coins Plus is the sponsor. Coins Plus, the name you can trust, and that is the truth. We do everything that you can find out there. There's people that shop the web. Folks, I'm telling you right now, I'll talk to you about it in a minute. This coronavirus stuff has absolutely rocked the world. Is it real? It's kind of funny because if you listen to me, you know, I think we're blowing a lot out of proportion. You got to remember what propaganda is. Who invented propaganda? Karl Marx, okay? Karl Marx. Who is that? That is Marxism. What is that? Communism? Oh, but we have a nicer name for it now. Socialism. We have Bernie Sanders, who literally has the, excuse the, I won't use the term guts, to stand up during all this hoopla and demand that, you know, free everything, free, everybody's wages are free and let the prisoners out. And I mean, folks, you know I talked to a very close relative of mine last night, I think, and she was saying, you know, she's tired of it, right? I get it. But at the same time, yeah, I'd say it's kind of relevant. And this is like, have you ever seen in your lifetime, and I'm 53, anything like this? Okay, we've always seen panics. And I honestly believe that we have gotten to a point. I think reality TV formed our society back in the like early, what, 1990s. When I was managing my first bank branch, there was very few things to choose from on television, and I used to love to watch Cops. That was the new thing, right? Cops was it. That was the first reality TV show. And by the way, that had a formative effect on the black culture. I mean, I'm not, you know, you got to be careful what you say now, but this is documented fact. When the baggy pants came in, remember in the 90s, the kids, oh, you pull your pants all the way down to your knees, the cooler, the lower they are. If you wear your pants at your ankles, you're super cool. They'd be like, dude, you only have your pants below your butt cheek. What are you, some kind of nerd? You know, that was a mounting cultural fashion statement. Get this, that started from the show Cops. Why? Because they would be chasing these project kids, or what do you want to call them, whatever, housing project, and they would actually, the cops would catch them because their pants would be so big they'd be falling down. They'd be trying to run and hold up their pants. Why? Hand-me-downs. They were poor. They were wearing their brother's pants. And so what happened there, and now we have a cultural fashion statement that forms, because who did it next? Oh, the rappers. And we definitely want to get our fashion statements from musicians, because don't you think they look terrific? You know, once in a while, I mean, I'll give you country music. The majority of them, they look good to me. I like it. You know, wear your Wranglers and your cowboy hat and your cowboy boots and put on your country western shirt. I'm in. But, you know, when you get into the other, you know, genres, the pop and the, well, I don't know, rap, whatever it is, you know, they go out on the limb. They look crazy. So now we're going to fashion our society's, you know, dress after these people. So anyway, the cops thing, the kids are running, pants are falling down. So now they think this is cool. It goes on to rap music. Now they got pants that get bigger, 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 lower, lower, lower. I never could understand how these kids could wear pants below their butt with their underwear hanging out. First of all, I couldn't understand how they'd ever want to look like that, but how'd the pants stay up? I could never figure that out. And I was in the mall one time back then, and I saw a girl, relatively well-endowed and too young. I have never seen anything like that before or since. I mean, she had the pants way too low, nothing above, and the belly shirt, you know, that just came all the way up below her breasts. And I was just like, whoa, this is like over the top. That was the natural progression of whoever's in charge of fashion, New York fashion statement or whatever. We'd lost our marbles. So that was the first reality TV show. I'm leading up to something here. Ha ha. And so what happened is, I remember when that show came out, I loved it. I don't know why. It was action. It was cool. And it was reality. And what happened was, I said right away when I saw that, I'm a fool, I guess. But I said, oh boy, this is going to be a good show. This is going to make cops, you know, cool off and be more, you know, careful about what they do, because they're going to be on film. Actually, it did the opposite. It increased the aggression, because you got to make it sizzle on the screen. That sets the new standard. People have now watched this stuff. They begin to expect this kind of behavior from people, from police officers. And police officers out there, I love you. Stand behind you 100%. Want you to know that. Honest to goodness, I'm your number one top supporter. Just talking about things that happen. But they start to get this pressure to behave aggressively. And it's a culture. It's a fraternal organization of brethren. I mean, you know, there's no bond that is formed between men that is stronger than fighting side by side in whatever manner. And I will say, I've had some different interactions with various police officers in Spokane. We just had a guy in our shop recently over a severely significant employee loss. And before that, I was dealing with another, big guy, you know, young, 6'4", just, you know, strapping. And, you know, he's got degrees, he's got a really excellent project manager experience. I mean, just really impressive kid. I had a homeless guy out in my dumpster one night here a while ago. My wife and I were here too late. We ended up being here 2 hours too late, actually more, because my wife went out to, I don't know what she was out throwing stuff in the, she was going to go throw stuff in our dumpster, which is inside of a big chain link cage thing, or not cage, but fence. And she heard someone yelling what she thought was crazy stuff, and she's looking all over. Well, she came running in the back door of the building, and we've got extreme security and cameras and everything. So she's like, there's someone out there. There's something crazy. They're yelling crazy stuff, and I'm scared. So I go back. I grab my little friend, the equalizer. And I go back and I'm looking at the vestibule cameras, because as you exit our building, we have monitors that show cameras all around the building. I can see every square inch, and for obvious reasons. And I'm like, including the roof. And I'm like, I'm seeing nothing. She goes, they're out there. I'm telling you, they're out there. And so I'm like, well, okay, I'll go check. Maybe they're way behind some bush I can't see, which I have so lit up and you know, photoed, videoed that it's impossible. But, you know, it's my wife, and you got to protect the lady. And so I go out, and I'm walking around, and I hear this guy yelling something, and it's kind of crazy stuff. Like, you know, I don't even, he's nuts. And I'm walking in this big circle listening. And then I start to tighten the circle, because as I hear the sound, and all of a sudden I'm standing outside the dumpster, you know, chain link fence thing that's around our big dumpster, because we get dumpster divers up the yin yang, which is really fun. And the police will never come for that either, but that'll add to my story. So I am like, I hear someone, and I'm like, where are they? And I look inside the chain link fence. There's room around the dumpster, and I'm not seeing anybody, and I hear it. And I'm like, then it gets quiet, and I'm like, man, I'm losing my mind. So I go inside the chain link, you know, and now I'm a little bit hesitant. And I'm like, hey, 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 you know, no response. I open up the dumpster lid and there's a guy laying, and it's 35 degrees outside, folks. It was cold. And there's a guy laying in the dumpster. He's got his shoes off. His feet are bare. His hands are bare. And I'm like, and he's yelling this crazy stuff at me. And I'm like, dude, what are you doing? And he's like, he's just yelling crazy stuff. I said, you're going to die of hypothermia, man. What are you doing down here? And he's yelling some, I don't know what he's yelling. And I just shut the dumpster. I said, I'm calling the police, man. I got to get you out of here. I said, I don't want you to die. And he keeps yelling, not making a lot of sense. And then I go in the building and I said to my wife, we got to get some blankets for this guy. I said, there's a guy in the dumpster and he has some little light. He has this cheesy little key light and he's like looking at his feet, which are like black and blue. And I mean, it's just sad. And so I go out with, we have these really nice blankets at the building. We have a room upstairs with a big couch to relax in. And we have these really nice blankets from like Restoration Hardware back in the day. Very expensive. And she's like, well, we got these. I said, fair enough. You know, they're, trust me, they're expensive, but they're nice and that's okay. It's saving a life, right? So I go back out and I'm like, hey, guy, I said, you're going to die, man. What are you doing? You got your shoes off. I said, you're going to get hypothermia. He goes, my shoes were wet and I wanted to dry them out. And I'm like, you get your shoes back on right now or you're going to be losing your feet. And so I said, here's some blankets for you. And then all of a sudden, his personality changed. He's like, hey, thanks a lot, man. And I said, what are you doing? You're going to die out here. And he goes, yeah, I know. He goes, and I'm not, and I'm comfortable with that. And I'm like, what? You know, so we go through all that. And I said, dude, I called the police. They're supposed to be on their way. I don't want you to get in trouble, but I said, I can't let you die. And I don't know where to take you. I said, there's got to be homeless shelters or something. And, you know, he proceeds to tell me some of his experiences there, which I've heard otherwise, the hypocrisy. I hired a guy one time who did an 18-month sobriety program at the Union Gospel Mission. And he was, you know, apparently they learn how to play the game, which is kind of sad. And so he wasn't a fan of that. But he told me he was DOC. Well, I know what that is, Department of Corrections, because my dad was a bail bondsman. So he's like, well, you know, I don't want to get in trouble or whatever. So then I get a light and I look down at him. Well, I mean, the poor guy, he's got one eye missing. He's got a sunken hole in his head where his eye was. And he just looks rode hard and put away wet. And I'm talking to him. I start talking about God and Christ and salvation and redemption with him. And I keep calling the police department. Where are you guys at? Where are you guys at? Well, they won't send anyone out. They don't want to deal with it. You know, they don't want to deal with the same thing, like I said, we get these dumpster divers that'll come out. They'll take all of our garbage and spread it everywhere and just make an absolute mess out of things. They break the locks. They go to extents. They take wire cutters and cut the chain link fence. And you call the police, they don't care. They don't care at all, you know. And you're supposed to handle it yourself, which, you know, the way I'd like to handle it sometimes might not turn out so well. And that doesn't mean I'd shoot them, but I might use a little bit of mace. But I don't do that because I don't want someone rolling on the ground for 20 or 30 minutes crying about the mace in their eyes. Then I can't get back in the building. So this guy, finally, I call the police department. I said, look, this is like my fourth call. It's been like 2.5 hours or something. And I said, you're going to have a death on your hands here. I said, you need to get someone up here now. And they're like, well, Mr. Walter, we've whatever they do, dispatch. I said, I don't care. You get someone up here now or you're going to have a dead body. I said, you send a cop up tonight in a few hours, you're going to have a dead body in my dumpster. Well, finally, out of the blue, right when I was like, okay, my wife and I were like, okay, that's it. We're going to go get this guy and I'm going to go rent him a hotel room for a night. And we go out and right then this cop, Spokane Police, pulls up in the back. The guy is massive. He's like 6'4", built like a you-know-what, Mack truck. young, good-looking guy, super professional. You know, saw that we were trying to be compassionate. He was extremely compassionate with the guy. And I said, can you take this guy somewhere? I mean, is there somewhere safe to go? I even said to the guy, I said, go to jail, man. You get three hots and a cot. He's like, well, my probation, parole, whatever, you know. And I understand people get stuck in those ruts, folks. But let me tell you something. That's who Jesus Christ loved, you know. Those are the people that they're not attached to all their false personas and, you know, and all that superficial baloney. They're just, you know, their heart is their heart. It may be broken and contrite, as the Bible says, but they're good people. My dad was a bail bondsman, and my dad was a very good man, extremely compassionate, extremely giving, did it so much stuff for those people's families and lives. And he dealt with those people, and they're trapped in a rut. And I just, you know, what I was getting at there was the kudos to this that police officer was also phenomenal. And my wife was like, man, she's like, you did great with that guy. I said, he was terrific, you know. But they're getting these young professional police officers who have their head on straight. They've got good attitudes. They're astute. They're alert. They really are top notch. You're always going to get the bad apple. But my experience with Spokane police, folks, is that, you know, it's been a wonderful growth to see that happen. But this guy I talked to was an ex-Navy SEAL. And, I mean, he looked like he could just, and I'm not a small guy. You know, I'm 6'2". I'm only 220 now. But in my days, you know, we all have our glory days. I was a lot bigger and stronger, but he looked like he could just pick me up and snap me in half and throw one direction the other. But it was just such a pleasure to see, you know, such a great big ex-Navy SEAL who is operating as a police officer to protect and serve and doing exactly that. And then humbling himself in just extraordinary kindness to this lovely guy. And we gave him some money, and which he was super grateful for. Not a lot, because, you know, you don't want to do too much there. They might spend it the wrong way or whatever. But I just wanted to say that we've had some real positive experiences that way. And I guess, essentially, you know, that's just the way we are, and that's the way we should all be. You know, I had an employee here one time who had Asperger's, and he kind of had a lack of empathy. And we both lived up in North Spokane, and we'd leave work at the same time, and I'd always be driving a few car lengths behind him. And one time, we had a couple situations, one in particular. One time, a guy in front of me, I was in the right lane, he was in the middle lane. A guy ran across at night, in black, ran across Division. The car in front of me hit him so hard, he flew literally 15 feet in the air, I swear. I might be exaggerating, but his body went upside down. It looked like something you'd see on Cirque du Soleil. Landed in front of my other employee's car. My employee swerved and kept driving. And I stopped, got out, tried to help the guy. The guy was in shock like a deer that had been shot. He got up, his eyes were buggy, and he went running off, and he was limping. It was just crazy. And I called this employee later. I'm like, what were you thinking, man? He goes, well, I knew someone else would take care of it. And then he and I were driving home another time, and a lady in a Ford Explorer spun out, went into the ditch. And I mean, obviously this stuff doesn't happen a lot. We worked together for 15 years, but she spun out, went into the ditch, flipped her car. He was kind of right behind me, saw it. He kept going, you know. Of course, I got out and tried to help the lady out and did or whatnot. But there's people that don't get out and help people. You got to be careful if you're a woman. My wife, this is really an important show, right? My wife, when we were young, newlyweds, we got married very young. We got married at 20 and had kids at 21. And my wife was pregnant at the time, and we needed money. She was doing like paper routes and stuff, and people would scold her because she looked so young. She looked like she was 15, you know. She was just an absolute doll. And people would say, you're too young to be pregnant, and, you know, and it's interesting. And who were they? These were the Christians. Why? We hate abortion, but God forbid. Now, she was 20. going on 20. Well, she was probably 21 at the time. But the thing was, is it's like, really? I remember that I was young going, how does that make sense? Because we knew some of the situations with the people. And I'm like, how does that make sense? You're going to condemn a girl that you think is too young, which, by the way, you don't ask questions first. And you're going to condemn her for being pregnant. And you're claiming to be a Christian. That's the self-righteousness that I'm talking about. Sometimes is you're going to condemn her for being pregnant, but you're also going to condemn her for having an abortion. So you're really condemning her in your mind for making a mistake and engaging in premarital sex, which is obviously kind of a serious problem in our society. And so that same time when she's pregnant, she looked really young. She was driving home to Towns of Montana from Bozeman by herself at night in my pickup, 11 o'clock at night. And she tells me the next day that she saw two guys pulled over on the side of the road with the hood of their pickup up. Of course, she pulls over, you know, 20-year-old pregnant woman or whatever, 21, whatever. I don't know what it was. But anyway, she pulls over and lets these guys in the car, you know, and takes them somewhere. And I just about lost my cookies. She also used to pick up hitchhikers because she's so compassionate and giving and kind and loving. And it's just her nature. And she just sees the best in everybody. So that I've, over the years, I've actually learned a lot from her about, you know, the care and concern for others, empathy. And of course, Christ has changed my heart. And so the point of all that is live your faith. By the way, my wife stopped picking up hitchhikers after that. But live your faith. You know, act out your faith. Don't just be hearers of the word, as James said, but doers. He, you know, hearing is irrelevant, frankly. It really is. If you really think about it, it's absolutely irrelevant to just be a hearer of the word. What good are you? I mean, you're a big sponge. I've had friends that are like, well, you know, I can't stand a sermon that goes longer than 20 minutes. I lose my attention span. And, you know, and I want, you know, and then you get the people, there's too much worship. There's not enough worship. I hate the music. I love the music. You know what? I mean, if your church is, you know, got AC/DC and Van Halen playing, and you're from the generation of the old hymns, get out and find another church. But if it's, you know, good worship music and stuff, just enjoy it. Worship the Lord with your whole heart, soul, mind, and strength. And everything we do is about doing. And that's something that God has really showed me over the years, and especially recently, that it's all about our actions. And so many of us, there's, you know, it's interesting when you get into the, the victim's mentality, liberal mindset, you get this, everything happens to me, everybody owes me, or you get into the lethargic Christianity. I don't know if there's a theology to name it, but it's the, I lost my job, poor me. I'm going to just pray, God, please give me a new job. Please give me, and you're like, so have you applied for any jobs? Or, well, no, I'm just praying that the Lord will provide one. Okay. Well, how about you step out and be a doer of the word, be an action-based individual, and then God will bless your actions. And so, so many of us, you know, struggle with these things, have a struggle with the action thing, and we've got this. You've got to trust God with your whole heart, mind, soul, and strength. I agree. But literally, read the book of Proverbs. There's 31 Proverbs out there. 31. Why is that? Well, the longest month of the year, or the longest months of the year, are 31 days. There, you know, so every month you read a proverb a day for the proverbs that, you know, apply to that date. And there's four extra at the end. And what do we got? We got a 28-day month, etc. So the extraneous proverbs you'll read on certain months, and etc. And then every once in a while, you'll get the Proverbs 31 woman, which is really a cool thing. I went over that here recently. A lot of women are intimidated by it and say, I can never be that. But if you read it in today's context, it is saying that you will be, you know, you'll be a profitable wife. You'll be financially sensitive. You'll be a good servant. And I want to say right there, that is not a bad word. Servanthood is not a bad word. Servanthood leadership is the best form. As a leader, there's, you know, the old school is like, hey, never ask an employee to do something you wouldn't do yourself. I have a philosophy, don't ask somebody to do something you can't do better yourself, and work alongside your employees as a fellow worker and friend. Occasionally, you got to be the boss. You got to show respect for other people to get respect. Don't demand it. Don't expect it. If people mistreat you, they're dealing with their own stuff. You know, I'm in the middle of another construction project, which is kind of my forte. And, you know, there's one individual that I've dealt with for a very, very long time that we had to part ways with. And I mean, he's a good guy, good friend, and he's dealing with a lot of stuff and personal life and his, temperament and everything, and it's just been really challenging, and he's just not doing well, and, you know, but it's not personal. One thing I learned a long time ago, it's not just you for the most part. If somebody just really, really abuses you in one way or another, or, you know, whatever kind of behavior you're dealing with out there, or if you go to a checker at Home Depot and she's just losing it, you know, most likely you're not the only one. It's something going on in their heart and their life. So those are the opportunities to minister and share Christ. People are broken. A lot of people have learned to shut down and just close their heart off to the world because they don't want to be exposed. They don't want to be vulnerable. How do you get that information out of them? First of all, you don't ask too much. Secondly, you follow your natural path of curiosity, but don't, you know, when you're talking to people, just be sincerely, deeply, empathetically concerned. You don't just look them in the eye and, you know, and go, oh my gosh, oh, he, I've seen that. And it just, it repels people. If you're deeply, sincerely concerned with a non-judgmental spirit, and I'll tell you, you know, I've had my life growing up as well, and I've seen both sides of the fence, I guess you'd call it. And, you know, I understand what people are going through, and I understand, you know, a lot of times, that, you know, people have their own stuff. They have their own baggage. They've got stuff they're dealing with, and there's nothing more pleasing to somebody than somebody who's sincerely and legitimately concerned. And what I was going to say a minute ago was judgmentalism is really relational suicide. Okay. So you think, well, I have to judge. I'm a Christian. Okay. So some girl comes to you and tells you she had an abortion, you know? Well, what's Christ's view of that? Christ has to deal with that. Christ will judge that. That's all handled. I'm not saying you ever condone it, but at the same time, you know, if they're like, you know, I'm proud of it and it was a good thing and it's my womanhood and it's my body, then yeah, you might want to step up a little bit. But if they are, you know, remorseful or suffering, they don't need you to heap coals on their head. They need you to show compassion and love. That's what draws them to you, and that's what draws them to Christ, if you are the representation of Christ. So there's a difference between not judging and condemning. You cannot judge and have full-on empathy. Sympathy is where you're like, oh, I'm so sorry for you, you poor baby, and oh my gosh, that must have been so horrible. That's sympathy. Empathy is like, wow, that's got to really be tough, you know. And empathy means to try to put yourself in another person's shoes. A lot of people struggle with that. A lot. And if you really do struggle with it, then that's a great area to ask God to help you work on, is your empathy, your ability to put yourself in other people's shoes, which is also kind of summarized in a statement from Christ, to love your neighbor, what, as yourself. How can you love your neighbor as yourself if you don't understand where they're coming from? You know, and it's the same with pleasing God. Our righteousness is but filthy rags, meaning when you just go out, you know, you're like, oh, I'm going to minister to this person, and I'm going to tell them this, and I'm going to tell them that. Now you're talking at somebody. You're not talking with somebody. And one of the most important factors and features of talking is being a good listener, but you have to be an active listener. They have to know you're listening. You got to nod and give them the look and listen and let them know you care. And then put yourself in their shoes while you're listening and respond from their perspective, okay? They blew it. You know, there's things in their life. A very good friend of mine's nephew just took his life here recently, and he had to go back for a funeral. I mean, those kinds of things in people's lives, he had a number of things going on. Those are things that, yeah, I mean, you don't think if a guy kills himself that he is carrying around the guilt and condemnation? Absolutely. What those people need is empathy. They need somebody to say, you know what? I may not agree with what you've done at all, but it doesn't matter. I love you as Christ loves you, and I'm going to show you Christ's love by my actions and my concern. You have to show action. You can't just sit back and speak it. Oh, I love you like Christ loves you. Let me go back and watch the football game. You know, you've got to show it in action. You got to make yourself uncomfortable. You got to go out of your way. You got to, you know, if they need something, get it for them. I'm not saying shell out your money and don't get conned. I know a guy who I think, well, I'll stack that up. There's, you know, Phil Altmaier and some of these other guys like who he runs the Union Gospel Mission. And he'll tell you the worst thing you can do is give money to those people that stand on the street corner. They're not really looking for housing. They've got all they want. They just have to be working on their addictions in order to engage in them. They don't have to be completely clean, but they've got to be on a serious program dealing with it. And, you know, the problem is I had a friend who was a Christian and or is, and him and his wife were out in the winter, and they talked to some guy, and you know, and he was on the street corner, and they said, hey, you want to come by our house? We'll give you a nice warm meal, and maybe you can do some work. And they had him there, and he gave him the big sob story. And so they put him up for the night, and they were going to help him out. And they woke up. No, they actually left for work the next day. And they let the guy back in the house or something. They didn't lock it properly or whatever. And they came home, and their home had been gutted, absolutely gutted. And that's why these guys will tell you, those people on the street corners are not looking to help. My wife and I were out in the valley years back when we were doing another construction project, meeting with an architect. And we went around this area by Freya and across the bridge and of I-90 and everything. And there was a lot of these, we'll work for food or whatever it is. Give me money. I need help. My children are starving. Signs all over. And I was like, wow, there's sure a lot of these guys out here. And they all give you puppy dog eyes. Well, afterwards, we met with the architect. We got done and we went over to the gas station. Well, here are these. I said, there's the guy that was on the call. Wait, there's another one. They're coming out of the store with cases of beer, 24 packs of beer. Or whatever they come in. I don't know how big they are. Just the big cases. In the old days when I was a little kid, they were 24 cans. But, whatever. 12, 18, whatever it is. And they're all carrying one or two of them. And they go around the back of the building. And here's five of these guys that we just saw. They're all sitting on their cases of beer, drinking beer behind the convenience store. Am I saying not to be compassionate? Absolutely not. Am I saying not to give? Absolutely not. My wife and I give to, you know, the point of discomfort constantly. And it's because I know that I'm giving to Jesus Christ. Now, you need to be a wise steward as a good servant. We'll say it's servanthood stewardship. Don't be a fool, but God knows your heart when you give. If you give, if you check all the boxes, and I've learned a lot of people struggle with that. A lot of people struggle with all kinds of emotions and excuses. And if you write down these four words that you should never do is rationalize, deny, justify, or minimize. You have to teach yourself not to rationalize, not to justify, not to deny or minimize. I got them in the wrong order that time. But think about it. Rationalize, justify, minimize, deny. I keep changing the order to confuse you. Rationalize, minimize, justify, deny. Those are the four reality killers. Those are the four responsibility killers. So many people rationalize their behavior. I was talking to a gal here recently who has a major financial issues going on, and which reminds me of another gal. But, and she's in a position as a beautician, and she only gets part-time hours at this studio, and she's super broke and frustrated and needs help, and she's so frustrated. And she wanted to buy a car, and she was going to do this and do that. And I said, the more I talked to her, I said, your problem is not that you need a better budget. Your problem is you're broke. You're not making any money. And, you need to go work for a better salon and make some money, because a really good beautician can make some good cash, although they're exposed to nasty chemicals and all that, I get. But that's just a fact. And then she says, well, I like where I work because it's low key. I don't think I could handle a higher end salon. And I'm like, well, of course you could. She's a classy looking gal and everything. And she goes, no, I like to cut hair, but I don't like to color hair. Why don't you like to color hair? I just don't like it. It's just, I really don't enjoy it. Do you know how to do it? Yes. Are you good at it? Sure. But you don't like to do it? No. And I'm like, so you're choosing to stay broke, in poverty, working part-time as a beautician at a second-rate beauty shop because you don't want to color hair? Yes. Well, sounds to me like you might want to start doing something you don't want to do. We get so mentally self-centered. I don't want to. I will complain about my predicament, but how many of our predicaments that we complain about are honestly our fault, our responsibility? How many times have I heard people in a dire consequential situation, why is God doing this to me? Gee, let me think. Maybe because you got drunk and drove and cheated on your wife or whatever. I could make a list of it. Pretty soon I'd be writing a country song, but I'm not going to do that right now because I'm not a good songwriter. But the thing is like there's accidents and acts of God. Job is an example of acts of God, right? God stepped in and, insurance covers acts of God and they specify them separately. Job experienced an act of God. And when he got everything back double, I think it might have been from Geico because they claim to really pay claims well and fast, and they may have paid him back so much on his insurance claim that he had double. And that's a joke. I don't think they had insurance companies back then. I think back then you insured with these God to become the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. They believe the book of Job is the oldest book in the Bible. And I think they're probably right. But, God will pay you back for your acts. God honors dignity and valor and bravery and courage. I guarantee you, folks, one thing, sin in a family, sin in life creates cowardice in a lot of cases, terrible cowardice. And people that grow up that way, they get a victim's mentality sometimes. And the problem is, I know people who are so talented. I mean, but they'll literally never let you know. And they'll say, I can't do this, I can't do that, I won't try. And yet what happened is they have a traumatic youth, something got in their head, they can't change anything. When you grow up in a traumatic situation as a young child, and I've talked about this before because I know a number of people who have, close friends and relatives, and they get that's their mindset. That's their new baseline. And they learn that they're powerless and they stop trying. And then they learn, if I try, I'll fail. So I won't try. And all of a sudden, you know, we're each accountable for ourselves. Each man shall give account of himself to God. We know that. The Bible tells us that. And we have a parable of talents that Christ gave us that tells us that, you know, we have, he gives each one of us according to our ability, talents according to our ability, right? And we're accountable for those. And God acts, or God speaks, as if he takes that very, very seriously. There's a number of scriptures out there that are very interesting as far as God's judgment towards our wasting of our talents. And so when these things happen in our life and they stifle our expression of our talents or use of our talents, we are ultimately accountable for wasting those talents. And for those of you who haven't heard, it's very interesting because God says in his word to the guy with the one talent, which is kind of interesting because you can equate that to a lot of things. You can equate it to people who have an extraordinary ability of something, or maybe perhaps, like I was mentioning, they went through trauma and they were left with one really sharp talent, and they choose not to use it. What does God say about that? That's the thing that's, I think, very relevant when it comes to actions, is, you know, he basically tells us that the man with the one talent was cast into the outer darkness, or cast into the really bad place that nobody wants to go, correct? You know, therefore take the, he takes it away and gives it to the one who has the 10 talents. For everyone who has, more shall be given, and then we'll have, you know, and we'll have an abundance. But from the one who does not have, even what he does have shall be taken away. Think about that. The one who does not have, even what he does have shall be taken away. Let me repeat that again. It says, for to everyone who has, more shall be given. Well, how do you have? God says he gave it to you. So how can he sit here and say, but from the one who does not have? He gave us these talents. So it's not just the talent he gave us, it's what we do with it. And he says, if you do not have a talent, he'll take it away. And I've seen that in my years too. People that have incredible talent, you know, we all go through similar tests in life. I mean, in other words, you're going to go through the same test over and over till you get it right. You might get frustrated and say, you ever had those days where everywhere you go, people are rude, everything's going wrong, right? There's times I've seen it happen. I'm telling you, it is not just perspective. What's God doing? He's testing you. How do you handle people? You know, and then if you don't pass, boom, you get to take the test again and again and again and again. You don't get to advance. Now, it's not like going through college where you put in your 4 years and you get your degree and you're done testing. Not. With God, he never quits or gives up on us. He is constantly behind us, pushing us, working with us, making things right, helping us, keeping us on the path, disciplining those he loves, trying to teach us to trust him, praying and not worrying. And, you know, when I talk about these things, I know what the Bible says. I know what's right, but it doesn't mean I'm perfect. I do this stuff as bad as anybody. But I know what God's word says. So he tells us, to everyone who has, and this is the parable of talents. First he says, here, I'll read backwards now. Let's do this. And this is, this scripture just reveals so much. He says, and the one who had also received the one talent came up and said to the master, I knew you to be a hard man. Okay. Rationalize, you know, whatever you want to call it, justify. reaping, I knew you to be a hard man, reaping where you did not sow and gathering where you scattered no seed. What an insult. What an absolute insult. The master represents God, but on earth, you know, don't lie to yourselves, folks. You get someone who's who's made a ton of money in life, it's not luck, right? You got to be blessed by God. I'm not going to deny that, but it ain't luck. They had to work their tail off. I've done okay in life. I feel very blessed. But I can tell you, I'm probably lived two lifetimes in one. God's given me a lot of cool experiences and whatnot, but it doesn't come easy. So God knows that. So the one who has received the one who had received the one talent came up and said, "Master, I knew you to be a hard man, reaping where you do not sow and gathering where you sow no seed." I've dealt with this in various employees, and I've especially dealt with it on people who've embezzled from me. And I've dealt with that on a sizable scale a few times. And I knew you to be a hard man. Okay, so you're a bad man. Whenever someone steals or misappropriates funds from an employer, psychology tells you, or anybody for that matter, they have to vilify you to justify their actions. You hear the word justify? Don't justify. So they have to create a false perception of reality. They have to vilify the individual. So he knew him to be a hard man, reaping where you did not sow. So he's a hard man. He's a bad man. And he just gets a bunch of money that he's never even tried for. He didn't even do anything to get it. It just all showed up. And he says, and gathering where you scattered no seed. Wow. He's saying you're just taking what does not belong to you. So he's saying you're a bad man, and you're a bad man with great luck, and you steal. Well, guess what? The parable of one talent person is projecting. Have you ever heard that term in psychology? Because the two parts that are projecting, you're a bad man. That's how they feel about themselves. And then they say, reaping where you did not sow and gathering where you scattered no seed. They're thieves. Remember, folks, a liar is a thief. The two go hand in hand. If someone has a problem lying, you better lock your stuff up because they're going to come after it. So he's projecting on this man. This is why the master is like, you know, this is in nice biblical language, but if we were standing there today, the guy who had the one talent would come up to the master, to the multi-billionaire who said, "Here, I'll give you some money. Go do me right." He'd be saying, "I knew you to be an incredibly shrewd person. Or the reason I buried your, the reason I did nothing with what you gave me is because I didn't trust you. I knew you were a hard man. You're shrewd, you're cold, and you're uncaring. And then you've made a lot of money, but it's just all dumb luck. You've been successful, just all dumb luck. And you gather where you don't sow seed. You're making money where you haven't done a thing. It's just luck. And you're a thief. You're taking what doesn't belong to you." I mean, can you imagine saying that to somebody who just tried to bless you with something and give you an opportunity to grow? That's what God does with us. He gives us each a set of talents that we're going to be accountable for. He doesn't care if you walk around mindlessly and never think about what your talents are, because he still gave them to you. You're responsible for them. It doesn't matter. It's like you have a $1 million bank account and you get a statement every month, but if you choose not to open the envelope and look at it, is that God's fault? I don't think so. And that's the way he looks at it. So then what comes next? Okay, you're a bad man, you're a bad man with good luck, and you're a thief. And then he goes, "And I was afraid, and went and hid your talent in the ground. See what happens here." I talked about cowardice a minute ago. God gives us talent. God gives us great opportunities. I have seen this in my business. Years of management. I mean, really, decades. I have seen people say, "Oh, I'm afraid. I'm afraid." And I honestly, I know that God hates cowardice. He hates it. Because what does the Bible say about fear? So let's go through what's going on. Let's wrap this up. The story is getting way too much hype, way too much hype. Every major news outlet is front paging this news about this virus. NBC is warning of this rising death toll. CNN is frightening everybody with diving stocks due to the coronavirus fears. You know, the Dow's been tanking. Even metals lately have kind of dropped, folks. That's called liquidity. Margin calls. It's dumping paper. People are wanting metals. The United States is virtually out of silver. We can't find it. We 2-3 weeks out to get it. It's way tough to find. I mean, it's just difficult. People are panicking, and that's, you know, buying silver is a smart way to go because you're not hurting yourself. You're just protecting yourself. No one knows where the virus came from. You know, some say snakes and bats. I've read all this stuff. The world's most dangerous pathogen I read today. I mean, seriously, the world's most dangerous pathogen. You ever heard of the bubonic plague? This is the Science Journal of Nature, you know. We've got, you know, did the Chinese government make it? How did it end up? And then humans and bats and who knows? But the fact is, it's like, you know, it's we don't know for sure. The media is making top dollar out of this. These ratings are through the roof. Please understand this. Do not get caught up in the frenzy and the hype. Fox News or anybody, they're feeding this beast because it makes some money. Ratings. This is a problem with 24/7 news. It's like a sport. They fight for ratings and they'll do anything to get them. Journalism. This is what's destroyed journalism. 24/7 news destroyed it. You got to remember, governments are always seeking more power, control, and they're doing that right now. I'm running out of time. This happens every few years. It pushes important issues to the back page. This has been going on. This one's really out of hand. The coronavirus doesn't necessarily affect you. There's a very solid chance that you won't even meet someone who's been affected by it. But the media makes you think everyone's in your backyard. The institutions who are benefiting from this hype are incompetent and dangerous. The CDC, I wish I had more time to cover this, and more. And that now they're racing to develop a vaccine with $8.3 billion. You can do a lot with that. And they're saying, you know, these grainy videos of dead and sick-looking people are being used to scare you. They're fake. They're doctored, etc. So don't get caught up in the hype. Don't live by fear. Stand strong. Live good. I do recommend, well, if you have, bottom line, folks, we got so many people that want to invest right now. Call us, send us a check. We will build you the best portfolio, get your approval before you accept it. That's the best way to go. Our number is 444-0044 in Spokane. Take care. God bless. Have a wonderful weekend, and thanks for tuning in. Bye-bye.